This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Heroes for Healthy Pets. We're passionate about your pet's health.
Yes, good day from California. Welcome to the Dr. Courtney Podcast. As you could probably guess, my name is Dr. Courtney. I'm a veterinarian, hosted Pet Talk on Nat Geo Wild, and I'm an all-around pet lover. I want to send a big thank you to all of you who are regular listeners, and for those of you who are just tuning in for the very first time, welcome. This is a podcast where we get to laugh, love, and learn a lot about pets. We've got lots to cover today. Today's show is slam-packed with excellent information that is most certainly applies to every pet parent and literally almost every person. This is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it. If you're the type of person that wants to have a closer relationship with your pet, this is the podcast for you, okay? You are definitely going to be into it. So let's just jump right into it. Movement. Today we're going to be talking about movement, and I feel movement is medicine. Movement is medicine. When you hear that, what does that actually mean to you? For some, movement is synonymous with the word exercise, and exercise is about as automatic as brushing their teeth or taking a shower. And for others, just the mere mention of the word exercise makes them cringe a little bit. And I think for the rest of us, we do it, but it can quickly become an afterthought if we're tired, hungry, exhausted, or maybe there's something good on Netflix. But to be sure, we all have a unique relationship with exercise. My relationship with exercise has certainly evolved. Growing up, wrestling was king. My diet, my entire athletic focus was dedicated to the sport of wrestling. In fact, every sport I did, including cross country, I did it simply to prepare for the sport of wrestling. Then I played rugby for all 4 years of college, and in my adult life, I competed as an NPC physique athlete. And you know, despite all of that, there are so many days where I've needed to give myself a pep talk before getting up to exercise. You know that little inner voice in your head that touts all of the benefits of exercise? Well, sometimes I listen to that voice, sometimes I don't. In humans, we know from countless studies that exercise improves your health. It's good for your heart, promotes weight loss, prevents osteoporosis, lowers blood pressure. It can even prevent colds or reduce their severity, and it even plays a role in fighting cancer. And it strengthens your mind, improves your self-esteem, cognitive function, and your memory. And that's just to name a few. We'd have to make this podcast hours long to talk about all the benefits of exercise. And by then, it would probably be time to exercise again. So it's clear that exercising helps to keep you healthy, but we also know that exercise helps to keep the entire family healthy. And most of you already know where I'm going with this, but that exercise regimen should include the four-legged members of your family as well. Exercise helps pets tremendously. It has the same benefits for pets as it does for people, if not more. I mean, you can't plop your dog or kitty cat in front of an iPad and say, well, have at it. So for pets, movement becomes their entertainment and their mental stimulation. Essentially, for pets, movement is life. And that's why it's incumbent on pet parents to give their pets a great quality of life with exercise. Most people walk their dog for four main reasons: eliminations, mental stimulation, exercise, and some training. But those are just the basics. Exercise becomes even more imperative when you look a little deeper into the breeds. I mean, for instance, look at a breed like a Weimaraner, for instance. Bred for speed, good scenting ability, and game hunting. A Portuguese water dog, those dogs can swim like summer Olympians. And a Belgian Malinois, they're like the fitness athlete of herding dogs, well-muscled and obviously trained by some in law enforcement to catch bad guys. But even if you don't have a canine athlete, they must have an outlet to relieve some stress or stimulate their mind. So we all know how amazing exercise can be, but how can we exercise with our pets so we all can get in on the fun? Are there some types of exercise that are better than others? How much is too much? That is the question of the day, and I'm so excited that we have our next guest to help us answer it. Our next guest is going to talk about five easy ways to get in shape with your dog. He's an absolute powerhouse in the world of pet health media, and he is just the person that I want to speak with. But before we get to our exciting guest, I want to be sure to let everyone out there know how to get in contact with me. If you have any questions, thoughts or topic discussions, you could reach me at Dr. Courtney DVM on Twitter and Instagram. Questions with positivity and love will get answered with priority, but not exclusivity. So we will answer anything. So right now, let's just pause for a few brief moments from a word on behalf of a real true hero of pets everywhere. And then let's reconnect on the flip side to talk about exercise and how to have fun with your pet.
Sit, stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
Rabies is the world's deadliest disease and results in the death of a child every 10 minutes. Over 99% of all human cases are caused through dog bites, and the virus can be eliminated through mass canine vaccination programs. Mission Rabies is a charity powered by passion and driven by results. We go to global rabies hotspots and we vaccinate dogs. To date, we've vaccinated over 1 million dogs and we've rabies educated over 2 million children. But it's not enough. We need to do more to beat this disease and we need your help to do it. Please donate, support, volunteer at www.missionrabies.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, now, feel free to get amped and charged about our guest today. In fact, I'm so pumped that during the break, I actually started working out a little. So our next guest today, his name is Dr. Ernie Ward, and he is, in a word, incredible. Early in his career, Dr. Ward was instrumental in bringing senior pet care guidelines to general veterinary practices in 1999. In 2001, he developed and published protocols for monitoring pets receiving long-term medications, such as anti-inflammatories, thyroid medications, prednisone, and more. He developed a chart for jug monitoring guidelines that I still see hanging in dozens of veterinary hospitals today. Dr. Ward is a pioneer in many senses of the word. He is one of the first to introduce the concept of early detection to pet parents, mandatory pre-surgical blood testing for dogs and cats, and he pioneered and advocated for extended vaccination protocols as early as 1999. He's given over 50 lectures in the U.S., Canada, Europe, and, I mean, he just talks about the importance of extended duration vaccines, and he wrote and produced a veterinary staff training guidebook on immunology and vaccinology 2004. And in 2005, he funded and founded the Association for Pet Obesity Prevention to help raise awareness on the dangers of excessive weight in dogs and cats. He's a published author for Chow Hounds, Why Our Dogs Are Getting Fatter, and a co-authored American Animal Hospital Association's Weight Management Guidelines for Dogs and Cats in 2014. So when it comes to keeping our pets fit, Dr. Ward has real bona fides. He's been featured in over 30 different media outlets, including NPR, Rachel Ray. And after all of that, he still finds time to be a personal trainer, triathlon coach, and multiple Ironman finisher. Podcast family, please join me in welcoming Dr. Ernie Ward to the show. Welcome, Dr. Ward.
Hey, thanks, Courtney. It's great to be here.
Thanks so much. I want to call you Dr. Ward. Can I call you Dr. Ernie?
Yes, of course.
Well, fantastic. Dr. Ernie, we do something on this podcast, which, you know, I'm so happy that you're able to join me for the second time. You're probably familiar with. It's called Set the Scene. And this is just where you set the scene of where you grew up and how you actually developed such a love for pets. Can you set the scene for us of Dr. Ernie growing up and developing a love for pets?
You bet. And the scene is rural Southwest Georgia. And wow, that's where I grew up. And all of my family farmed. My mother and father were the only two that actually went to college. So they actually had different jobs. But we still grew up surrounded by row crops and chickens and goats and horses and cows and all of those types of critters. So that's the scene. That's embedded in who I am. And of course, that just extended out into me becoming a veterinarian. And I guess, you know, it's one of those things where I think there's really two types of veterinarians. There are the veterinarians that sort of find it maybe in college. They say, what's a cool thing to study? And that's awesome. But for me, I was born this way, you know, since I was knee high to a grasshopper. I've known I was going to be a veterinarian. So everything in my life has just been around it. You know, as my wife and I, we were recently at a charity event, and we were my wife was giving a little presentation, and she was like, you know, this isn't who my husband is, me being the husband there. She goes, it's just all he knows. Like, you know, it's every fiber. And I love that. I feel very fortunate.
Yeah, it's literally in your DNA. Now, one other thing that – not one other thing. There's many other things, but an amazing thing that just seems to be part of your DNA is also exercise. What was your relationship with exercise growing up, and how did you arrive at doing triathlons and Ironman races?
Right. And I was your classic nerd all through school. So I was the smart guy. I remember trying out for football in ninth grade, and the coach took me aside and he said, hey, Ward, I hear you're a pretty smart guy. Why don't you go join the newspaper staff? So I was not an athlete like you in high school. I was more of the editor, and, you know, I was doing those sorts of things. But as I became an adult, you know, I definitely was looking for ways to stay in shape. And so when I'm busy, you know, I had a big practice at that time, and you know, I felt like even though I'd been a lifelong vegetarian, I just wasn't quite where I wanted to be as far as fitness. And so this is my late 20s. And so I started on a journey to discover what would later turn into ultra endurance athletics, which is Ironman. So I took, like anybody else, I got up off the couch, started training for a 5K. I went to 10K, started doing half marathons. And before you know it, you know, a decade has passed and you're in really good shape. And, you know, you start tackle things like Ironman. And so for me, I think that, as you mentioned in the intro, movement is part of life. You know, I think that we are bipedal creatures. Our dogs and cats are quadrupedal, and we are designed to move from one place to another. And I think that if you don't engage in physical activity, you are not fully engaged in what I consider to be the human experience. And certainly that applies to our dogs and cats as well. So, you know, for me, Courtney, I was just looking for ways to push myself mentally, emotionally, physically. And that's why, you know, there are really two types of athletes in this world. There are those that like to be big and strong and move things short distances. And there are those people that are sort of lean and slower and go long distances. And I definitely am in that category.
Yeah. You know, when you mention that sort of triad of mental, physical, and emotional and spiritual health, and or you whatever, emotional, spiritual, that's the third of the triad there. What I love about that is you hit all of the major points. We don't talk so much about emotional and spiritual health, obviously, in pets because it's hard to jump inside their spirit and emotions. But what do you see as the main benefits to exercising with your pet?
Oh, yeah. And Courtney, I will make that leap. And I've certainly published many, many articles with my opinion. We see this in behaviors. So dogs that have anxiety-related problems, that's typically a byproduct of lack of physical activity and mental stimulation interaction. So, you know, when I look at this, are they happy? What's their quality of life look like? And if I see anxiety and stress behaviors in a dog or cat, the first thing I prescribe is increased physical activity because I know the connection there. And I know not only how it helps humans, but I've seen that in my own practice for, you know, 25 years.
It's the best medicine. You're right.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that too often, you know, we try to look for a solution in a prescription medication or even a surgical procedure or something like that, when often if we would just get out the leash, we could probably find the same solution in a much safer fashion.
Oh, man, that makes total sense. It's like, let's stay away from the meds on the shelf. And let's pull out a leash. Let's actually move.
Right. Well, and one of the things too, Courtney, I didn't mean to jump in, but just, you know, people are searching for these more natural alternatives. You know, you see this in the marketplace when it comes to pet foods. People want organic and natural, and, you know, they want medications that aren't so synthetic and have all these side effects. And yet, while we're desperately searching for those things, the most obvious natural remedy is exercise, physical activity. And so, you know, again, if you're listening today, ask yourself, say, you know, am I spending more time studying and examining the pet food labels than I am walking my dog? And if so, maybe we should start to flip that equation around a little bit.
One of the major benefits to exercise, I find, is reducing pet obesity. There are a whole host of reasons in which pet obesity, we can see common consequences from that, whether it be diabetes, increased weight on their joints, immobility, and difficulty breathing. Have you seen, in just in your experience in all of your time with pets, the benefit of helping to get pets down to a good, well-conditioned body weight and body condition?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I look at how can we improve the quality of life for the pets that we love, it begins with maintaining a healthy weight. Because what's happening, I mean, if just without getting into too much of the details, when a pet has obesity, they are in a chronic inflammatory state. So you know how you feel when you have the flu? Well, that's kind of how the body feels when there's obesity present. So, you know, I encourage people to take this very seriously right now. I mean, we're working with the AVMA and with several of the European organizations. You know, we're working on actually following the human medical community lead and calling defining obesity as a disease in pets as well. So all that's happening this year. It's very exciting stuff. But nonetheless, we're trying to do this to raise awareness and attention that, you know, when you're trying to say, gosh, you know, what can I do to help my pet live a longer life, a healthier life, avoid cancers and high blood pressure and kidney failure and all those sorts of things. Well, it gets right back to maintaining a healthy weight. And if you're listening today and you're going, well, you know, Ernie, that sounds great, but I don't have time to train for a marathon. You don't have to. I mean, we're really talking about small increments of physical activity. Walking your dog for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening is about all most dogs really need. I mean, obviously we would like more and we'd like more structured, but if you can just start walking your dog for 30 minutes a day, that makes a huge difference.
I love that, because not only are there a diverse panoply of exercise that you can do with your dog, I feel like let's simplify this a little bit. A good old-fashioned walk can be just as beneficial. So when somebody adopts a new dog into their household or lovingly accepts a new puppy into their household and they're just starting off and they say, I want to get my dog started on regular walks and I want them started off on the right foot, or should I say paw, but they want to do that. What are some things they should do to make right. sure that starting off on a good walk for their new puppy is safe and they can be less concerned about some of the dangers out there?
Right. And the number one barrier to walking dogs is simply that they never trained their dog to walk on the leash to begin with. I mean, when we look and we've surveyed this, I mean, this is something I've been deeply engaged with for the past 15 years. Every survey that we do and we say, why don't you walk your dog more? They say things like, my dog doesn't behave. My dog barks or growls at other dogs. My dog, you know, lunges on the leash. So if you've just brought a new puppy into your home or a new dog, the first thing I want you to focus on is actually just leash training. That is the one barrier that is the easiest to overcome, and yet few of us actually ever do that. So if you're afraid to walk your dog because of how it behaves or you're unable to control it or whatever, then this is the time to work with your veterinarian, find out who's a good trainer if the veterinary clinic doesn't offer that, and say, look, here's what I need to do. I need to learn how to walk my dog on a leash. And, you know, and people like me have written about it. I've written tons of articles that are online, certainly in Chow Hounds. I have an entire chapter devoted to how to walk your dog on a leash. And of course, we then get into running with your dog on a leash, which I'm sure we'll touch on before we're done. But that's the first barrier. The second thing is, of course, you want to make sure that this is mentally stimulating to your dog. So just walking the same walk every day, day in, day out, will get boring for you and your dog. So some simple tips that I tell people to do is reverse your path. So if you go around the block always, you take a left out of the doorway, take a right, you know, stop halfway through your walk and spend some time, you know, there working on something, sit down, stay, you know, come, fetch. So like halfway through your walk, take a 10-minute break to work on a training aspect. You know, all of those simple things can actually really stimulate your dog and make the walks more enjoyable and meaningful.
It's a fully engaged activity. And so when you're walking your dog, a lot of people, you're right, look at it as just a passive engagement. They're on their phone, they're doing something else while they're walking their dog. And what I love in what you're advocating is that it's a group effort. You are engaged with your dog, and it actually just brings you closer with your dog every time you go outside, exercise, and walk.
Yeah. And Courtney, I want to jump in because I've been on a bit of a tirade here the past few years about people walking their dogs and talking on the phone.
Well, please tirade away. This is what it's all about.
You're kind of fubbing your dog, right? I mean, you know, the whole idea to go and walk with your dog is that intimate time. You know, this is your dog has been sitting at home all day waiting patiently for you. And then suddenly you get them, you strap on the leash, you walk outside and you don't pay them a bit of attention because you're on your Facebook or you're on the phone or whatever you're doing. I would please implore you to take that 10 or 15 minute opportunity to connect with your dog. And I know people are saying, well, gosh, Ernie, you know, they're walking and they're sniffing ahead of me and they're not paying any attention. That's because you're not paying attention to them. And I tell you, it can be so much more enriched if you just would sit there and constantly talk to your dog while you're walking, giving them even simple commands, you know? And again, you know, you don't have to be, you know, oh, wow, I'm going to heal my dog or whatever. It's just those things of having that conversation. And I know that sometimes veterinarians and pet owners, like, you know, they really don't talk back to you. Well, I think they kind of do. And I really, really, really want people to say, don't just fub your dog, you know, don't ignore them by talking on the phone. Actually engage with them. And that's why I love, we try to get people to take, you know, we take the halftime break. So if you're going to go walk them for 15 minutes, about halfway through the walk, just pause for a few minutes and work on one thing. I'm telling you, your dog is so primed and receptive to learn something during these walks that just take advantage of that golden moment there to stop and say, let's work on sit down, stay, fetch, come. Whatever that little task is that you're working on, your dog is saying, you know, this is what I really, really live for.
And they're mentally stimulated. And so they
absolutely.
I mean, we've all seen dogs before they leave the house. Some of them will do that, basically a dance before they leave because they're so excited
at
the idea of getting out and moving. And so that, I think, like you were saying, it's just their mind is primed and ready to be receptive to anything training. Now, there are people listening to you who are like, all right, Dr. Ernie, I mean, you're right. I've been kind of doing a little bit of self-evaluation. I've been introspective, and I haven't. I haven't really been giving my dog the kinds of walks that they need. My question, and I'm sure some people are wondering, are there things that they should bring with them on their walks? There are some people who are saying, how important is it to vaccinate or have a microchip? And just to hit you with another one, some people are wondering, what's your opinion about flexi leads?
Sure. Right. Well, and we'll get to that last. Okay.
Okay.
So first of all, before you go walk around the yard or the park or the block, I want to make sure that your dog is protected against the common infectious diseases. And that includes things like the canine flu, because these things are highly contagious. And you just would hate to have your walk interrupted by another dog who comes up to say hello, and they transmit a pretty serious disease or infection. So vaccines are imperative. This also now extends to parasite control, because you're out there walking and maybe you take that little halftime break to work on sit down, stay, your dog could encounter a flea or a tick or a mosquito. So you want to make sure that your dog is protected against parasites because, again, we want them to be as safe as possible. The flexi leash.
Yes,
I don't
like
them.
Let's talk about that.
I've never liked them. I wish, you know, in fact, years ago I was doing a television spot and I jokingly said, you know, I think they ought to be banned. Of course, I was immediately contacted by a manufacturer of one of those leashes. But the reason that I say that is because you really – there's two issues I have with the leash. Number one is the lack of control. So if your dog is 20 feet away from you, And I've actually seen this myself out on runs, then suddenly that dog can dart and almost come into traffic. It can go and approach another person or another dog. You really don't have the control. Also, you're at more risk for injury. Just look at the physics of it, right? I mean, so we know that that force multiplier is that distance away from you. And so when people are complaining about sore shoulders and elbows because they're walking their dog on these extendable leashes, I say, look, let's get a control. Let's do a 4 to 6 foot leash. Let's keep them in close. The second thing is getting back to that, how are we really engaged with the dog? And if they're 15 feet in front of you, you're not really together. And so I'm doing everything in my power to make sure that connection is solid and we're doing everything to maximize and optimize it. So the flexible leashes, I think, pose a significant safety hazard to you and your pet, as well as risking them running off into traffic or, again, encountering another person or pet. And then number two, I think that we lose some of that intimacy the greater the distance is. So I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I see a lot of dogs for limping injuries, and sometimes I'll see them and they'll have a little bit of nerve sensitivity in their neck or down their radial nerve, which is that nerve that goes down your arm. And a lot of pet parents will ask me, well, how did my dog sustain a radial nerve sensitivity or radial nerve injury? And they don't realize that constant yanking on these flexi leads on a large leash can really put a lot of stress and strain and basically traumatize these nerve injuries. And so go ahead, please. Yes.
Yeah. And one thing, too, the reason that people are attracted to these, in my opinion, Dr. Courtney, is the fact that they don't have good control of the dog. So they're thinking, oh, well, you know, he wants to be free. And that gets back to that training element. You know, my dogs, we run together with a 4 foot leash. I really want them there close. And people are like, 4 foot, that's going to get all underneath you. They don't, because they're trained and they're used to running at that set distance, you know, and most of my dogs have always run within about 2 or 3 feet of me. You know, we just kind of are locked in and we run. And if you're a runner, I would say that, you know, I think some of the waist belt leashes are actually pretty good if you want to go hands free. I haven't used them because of just, again, my running style and having done this for 20 years with dogs. You know, I'm used to carrying a leash and that's just my style. But I think if you're new to the sport and you're new to running and jogging with your pet, then you should look at some of these really innovative waist leashes. I think they're actually quite handy and can maybe make your walk more or run more enjoyable.
I like that. I really, really do. And this is the part that I think a lot of people are craving for that information. What kind of exercises can we do with our pet? Is how much too much? And besides walking, is there any other fun things that we can do with our pet? But before we get to that, let's just take a short break. We're going to hear from a word from one of our sponsors. We'll be right back. And when we do come back, Dr. Ernie, you'll still join us to talk about some of the fun exercises that we can do with our pet?
You bet.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
We'll be right back right after these messages. Stay tuned.
It's not just a sneeze. It could be the pathway to disease. Your dog is at risk for contracting dog flu. That's why it's important to vaccinate your dog for dog flu. Get your dog vaccinated today. Visit dogflu.com for more information.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We are animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Live life unleashed.
And we are back. We're talking with Dr. Ernie Ward, a real powerhouse when it comes to just information about how to exercise with your pet. Today's topic is 5 easy ways that we can get in shape with our dog. And we've had some really, really good topic discussions just earlier, just talking about all the reasons for exercise and all of the benefits of exercise. But now we're going to get right into the weeds of it and talk about some real fun stuff. We've talked about one of the most common forms of exercise, which is just a simple old-fashioned walk. But Dr. Ernie, you've been exercising with pets for over 20 years. Are there other exercises that you have found that maybe some people don't necessarily think about or aren't as discussed as frequently that you can do with your pet?
Absolutely. And the first thing I want to tell listeners is this. We want to key in on physical activities that dogs evolved to be really exceptional at. And that's why you always hear us talk around, you know, running and walking and leaping and jumping, because that's what they're designed to do better than anything on the planet, arguably. So, I mean, they're really elegant creatures when it comes to movement in a forward fashion. So we want to tap into that. The second thing is, of course, you go, okay, what else can they do that they're good at? And that's where that leads us to the water. That leads us to swimming. I mean, many, many breeds are absolutely, you know, bred to get in the water and swim. So, you know, I have a border terrier who she just loves to swim. In fact, when we're out surfing, when we're out paddleboarding, you know, she's like, okay, you know, that's awesome, but I'd rather swim. So if your dog enjoys water activities, get them in the water. Now, obviously, I think you should have a life jacket on. They make some amazing new, you know, life jackets. And people are saying, well, wait, they can swim. So why do you want that on there? It's actually to assist you in getting them in and out of the water safely. And again, I live at the coast, the beautiful East Coast. And so when we're out in the surf and the ocean and the waterways, I want to be able to quickly reach down and secure my dog. Also, it's a nice place to attach a leash. So, you know, there are a lot of benefits to life jackets, but I encourage you to have one because when they tire out, you know, again, they may not have access to get on a boat or get on a dock or whatever. Another activity that I really like are things that involve fetching and retrieving. And so there's lots of sports out there that really tap into that. You know, even some of the you've probably seen these dogs that do the dock jumping into the water, you know.
Of course, yeah.
The Purina has a great series with that. But regardless, you know, what you're tapping into is that retrieving mechanism. So these dogs have evolved to spot things that are moving and then go and bring it back. So again, if your dog likes to retrieve things, playing games with frisbee, fetch, you know, I mean, there's just lots of cool things you can do. Agility. I mean, I love some of the coursing work. You know, in addition to agility, there's something called coursing where you can actually go and run with your dog, you know, through different types of cross-country types of events with different elements. But I like agility because there are a lot of breeds that really like to move quickly. They like to make cuts and so forth. Now, obviously, all of these activities that we're talking now, Dr. Courtney, do involve some physical risk. You and I are involved in sports where, you know, we can injure ourselves. And so you want to pay close attention. Like if your dog is not conditioned, if your dog has gained a few pounds, if your dog isn't used to doing quick bursts of speed, then frisbee or agility or fetch or even swimming might not be the right start. So again, getting back to, you know, if your dog loves it or enjoys it, then you'll do it more often. Whatever you do, though, the one thing that I really encourage people to do is find a sport, an activity that you and your dog both can engage in simultaneously. We call this parallel exercise. And if you like to run or jog and your dog does, then that's your built-in workout buddy. You know, if you or your dog like to do agility courses, start running that agility course with them, you know, really pushing yourself to learn new things. I'm really excited about some of these new coursing events that are out there where you get to go and run with your dog through the woods and so forth. And so trail running for me is just a passion. I think many runners enjoy getting out on the trails, but it's even better when you can share that time with your dog.
So for you, trail running is your form of parallel exercise. That's a new term for a lot of the podcast family, but that's your personal preference.
Oh, absolutely. Because I like the softer surfaces. So that's better for my joints and my dog's joints. There's a lot more sort of visual and even to a dog scent interest. So, you know, there's things to, it keeps you interested. You know, you're running through the woods or through the forest and you're kind of going, wow, this is cool, you know, and there's stuff to do. The other thing I like about trail running is there's plenty of opportunities to take a break and just like engage with nature. You know, so for me, you know, halfway through the run, we may just sit down and just sort of commune not only with each other, but also just be present in the moment in nature. And sort of, I think it's important in our high tech lives that are so busy that at some point you're able to get back in your daily life and ground yourself. And I actually mean that quite literally. You know, you really want to make sure that you're able to escape that computer terminal and actually get into the beautiful outdoors. And I think that, you know, I recently did a series of articles for Human Exercise Magazine, and I talked about dogs being the gateway drug to nature. And what I was getting at was this, you know, if your dog needs, and I mean that, needs to go outdoors and needs to walk and play and engage with the ground, then that might be your introduction to nature. And I think that in our busy modern world, Dr. Courtney, we are just losing that touch with nature, and I am desperately trying to bring that back because I do think that's part of why humans do have stress and anxiety. I do believe that when we don't engage in physical activity regularly and commune with nature, if you will, you know, then we do lose a part of ourselves. And, you know, I don't think we can always make that up with virtual reality and video games.
Dogs are the gateway drug to nature. I think that's the quotable of the week. I definitely, you're on the East Coast. I was born and raised in Connecticut, so I love the East Coast. But now I've been sort of indoctrinated to the California lifestyle. And one thing that's really seemed to have taken off, and this is a trend that seems to have its flare-ups and it goes away, but certainly yoga. I've heard of doga. We now are seeing a lot of classes on cat yoga. There's a lot of YouTube sort of viral sensations of goat yoga. I'm very curious as to what you feel about yoga with animals and your opinion about yoga with animals and where you see this trend going.
Well, as a person who is a longtime practitioner of meditation, you know, I like anything I can to create some stillness in my life. Having said that, I think that if you want to do yoga with your dog, then do it. Do I think it benefits the dog as much as it could benefit you? No. I think the only issue that I really have, quite frankly, with these classes is does it distract from the human practice of yoga? And, you know, because, again, there are different philosophies, different practitioners, different styles of yoga. And so, you know, I think there are some that are perfect for dogs and cats and others that maybe not. One of the things, too, Courtney, just so you know, like starting about 10 years ago, you know, I became involved with a company called Canine Fit Club. And we actually have little – we have 40, almost 50 locations throughout the U.S. now. And basically, wow, you can go to a gym and work out with your dog. So I've always been very, you know, aggressive, and I've tried to do everything I can to innovate around that space. Now, we do have some yoga classes, but they're really more of stretching, you know, and there's a difference. And I think some of the audience will probably understand what I'm saying there, but they're really more involved with stretching and flexibility. And I think that is really, you know, when we've evaluated this and we've said, what can we take? What's the best bits of yoga that we can actually apply into a meaningful fashion for dogs, we really get in more to flexion, to working with their joints, because I think that there's a great place for that. So if you're listening today and you're curious about it, you may want to check out Canine Fit Club online and see if there's one near you, and then really look at sort of, if your dog has hip problems, for example, you may want to explore some of these things to work on their range of motion, you know. And I know, Dr. Courtney, you do a lot of surgery, so you can probably see exactly where I'm going into this for the rehab world.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's literally, it's almost like you read my mind. I do, obviously, I'm on the surgical side of things, and I see a lot of dogs benefit from physical therapy. And whether it's used as a ancillary or adjunctive modality after surgery, or whether or not it's used as a sole modality where we can avoid surgery. And that's part of what's enjoyable about doing surgery as a discipline, is that one of the best things about it is knowing when not to do surgery, when you can right. avoid a dog from needing surgery. I think that's one of the things that really makes me smile. And physical therapy has been one of the best modalities for that. Do you find that at Canine Fit Clubs, or as you are exercising with your dog, that you can incorporate physical therapy techniques within those exercise regimens? Or do you find that's best done by a certified physical rehabilitation specialist?
Right. So many of our clubs are actually run by registered veterinary technicians. So in those areas, that's where we start to get a little, we lean in a little more to this rehab setting. But obviously, you know, in my opinion, veterinary rehabilitation should be done under the supervision of a veterinarian. So because they're just different, you know, again, our classes aren't rehab classes. There's really, as I mentioned, that's why I was getting into the whole flexion and flexibility. That's, we're kind of taking that approach. But overall, in general, people need to do things. You know, if you're listening today, I will tell you there's something simple you should do every day, preferably in the morning, but you can do it whenever. And that is just work on one-legged stands. Just wow. Can you actually stand and hold yourself on one leg? I'm doing it just instinctively as I'm saying this. But the reality is, you know, just keeping that core balance, you know, especially as we get older, falls and fractured hips are the biggest thing that can really derail your health and quality of life. So really just start working on that and you know, just standing on one leg and then moving around and being able to, you know, and a more advanced bonus pro tip is, can you close your eyes and stand on one leg? But the same rules apply with dogs. And this is why we like to do a lot of work on uneven surfaces. So you see us do a lot of work with dogs on Bosu balls, on peanuts, on inflatable peanuts, because we know that engaging on uneven, movable surfaces, which is why I love surfing and paddleboarding in particular, because that is what's going to engage not only your core musculature to keep you strong in the middle, to keep you upright, to allow you to do functional movements throughout your life, but more importantly, to help protect you if you do lose your balance and fall, because now your body is already adapted and strong enough to say, whoa, I'm starting to lose something here, and catch yourself. So again, if you're listening today, think about uneven surfaces, think about one-legged stands, and just throughout your day, can you know, if everybody listening today would just simply pause two or three times throughout the day and just stand on one leg, and it's hard at first. I mean, you know, a lot of people can struggle with this, but just work your way into it and just remind yourself, because what you're doing is activating so many neurological and, of course, musculoskeletal systems that will later in life perhaps prevent you from having an injury.
Okay, this is perfect. So many people have so much homework to do. They're like taking notes. They really want to make this work. The last thing I want to ask you is where the rubber meets the road. And that is, people are saying it's either one of these three scenarios. It's either hot, it's too cold, or it's a rainy day. One of those three scenarios. How do you exercise with your pet in any of those three scenarios where you're worried whether it's brutal outside? Let's say Chicago's has some of the most brutal winters, or if it's a rainy day, how do you navigate that?
Right. And that's a really common barrier. A lot of people, and quite frankly, Dr. Courtney, you can make that excuse any day of the year, anywhere. You can go to San Diego and go, gosh, it's kind of hot. Gosh, it's kind of cold. Gosh, it's kind of rainy. So the first thing is actually evaluate, is it a valid excuse? Because there are times, as you mentioned, in Chicago, when it's negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit outside, that's not safe for you or your dog to go out in. So, and if it's a torrential rain, obviously that's unsafe. You know, it's too hot. It's 100 degrees too hot. Step aside and say, what are the boundaries? Number one, when it starts getting above about 80 to 85 degrees Fahrenheit, and when the humidity levels are definitely north of 75%, that's kind of a bad combination for dogs, because the way they exchange heat is different than humans. They don't perspire, they have to pant, and that actually is difficult in high humid, because they're actually blowing off moisture, and that's why they're panting, one of the reasons why they're panting, and they're blowing off that moisture, and when they have a high ambient humidity, then of course they can't exchange that heat. So when it gets above 80, 85 Fahrenheit, 75% humidity, you're probably going to have to back off of a lot of strenuous outdoor activities. And that's where the first little barrier is. If you're out walking your dog and it's 85 degrees and 80% humidity, you're probably okay. If you say we want to go run at an 8 minute per mile pace for 10 miles, I'm going to say, hold your horses, right? That's dangerous. So if the reality is, you know, sort of build in, say if it's hot and humid, then we just go for a walk, you know, and honestly, 15 to 30 minutes, nobody's going to get dehydrated. You know, unless your dog has cardiovascular or respiratory problem, you're okay. What about cold? You know, when you start getting below freezing Fahrenheit, that's when some of us start to get a little concerned. But you can easily, you know, adapt that with booties. You know, certainly if there's snow on the ground or ice or so forth, you can also use lots of warming vests. There's all types of really cool devices. So I find that cold is a lot easier to compensate or adapt to than hot. So that just if you're out there listening. And then we get to rain, you know, that's kind of your call, right? There are a lot of dogs. I've got one of my dogs who she loves the rain, you know, and so other dogs just are like, no way, I'm not going out even to potty. So you kind of find your way around that. I would just say try to minimize the excuses when it's legitimate. Back off. You can do things indoors. You can even just, you know, run them up and down the stairs or play, you know, fetch in your hallway. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it. But missing 1 or 2 days, Dr. Courtney, isn't going to derail your fitness. It's missing out completely where we really go wrong.
That's beautifully said. Minimize the excuses. I think if there's one thing that we could take away when we think about exercise, and as I mentioned earlier, is bringing it full circle, is that pep talk I said, that inner voice in my head telling me how beneficial exercise is. And when I think that inner voice from now on, after listening to you, it's going to say, minimize the excuses. So this is perfect. I absolutely love it. Honestly, there's so much we could have unpacked today, and we literally could just talk about how fun exercise is and how beneficial it is for you and your pet. We could talk about this all day, but at some point, you and I need to take a break so we can go exercise. So let's go ahead and do that. I really, really enjoyed talking to you, and I just want to thank you so much for your time. I think all of our podcast family today, we learned so much, including myself. So I appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure.
The only one thing I'm going to ask you to promise is that you'll come back for more discussions on the podcast.
You can count on that. I love talking to you, Dr. Courtney. I love your message, what you're doing to help pet owners. I mean, it's just fantastic. So anything I can do, you let me know.
Thanks so much, Dr. Ward. It was awesome having you. All right. Wow, folks, that was amazing. Huge information, lots to unpack there. Just absolutely incredible. We got to talk about just how beneficial exercise is first, and most importantly, why all of us have pets and love animals. It's to increase and strengthen that personal relationship you have with them and make sure it's more fun for both you and your dog. We got to talk about safety. And one of the most important things when you're taking your pet out for exercise is safety. And then we started out with something basic, just regular leash training. Unfortunately, we had to get into the social media because that seems to sometimes put distance between us and our pets. So always engage with your pet when you're exercising with them. We got to learn a new term today. Parallel exercise, and that is engaging in exercise both you and your pet can enjoy. Of course, everybody out there, if you can, check out Canine Fit Club. Dr. Ward really has some glowing affirmations to say about Canine Fit Club, and he's personally involved with them. So I definitely check them out. And then, of course, we got to talk about where the rubber meets the road. How do you actually exercise with your pet in a variety of conditions, whether it's summer, winter, or when it's raining outside? And I think at the end of the day, what we can say to ourselves is, let's minimize the excuses. Let's keep moving and let's continue to exercise because it's beneficial for both us and our pets. It was an amazing conversation, and I know that I'm going to make him come back for part two because it's been that much fun. But podcast family, that concludes this episode. Please join me for another episode where we'll get to talk to even more scintillating and exciting guests. And in the meantime, just keep in mind, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.